Kerry.
Welcome back. Now, as you know, over the weekend, we had loads of photographs on social media of the many, many Kerry fans who attended the Kerry Mayo game in Fitzgerald Stadium on Saturday. And just to let you know that if you come across a photo of yourselves on our Radio Kerry social media, then you might just tag yourself in the photo. And if you do that, you'll be in with a chance of winning a fabulous Radio Kerry gift pack. So if anyone has said to you, oh, I saw your name, or I saw your face on the Radio Kerry Facebook page or the Radio Kerry Instagram page or wherever, if they say that to you, go and find it, tag yourself, and you never know, we might randomly pick you out and announce you as the winner of a Radio Kerry gift pack. So that will all happen on Thursday, by the way. And don't forget, there'll be another chance to win in that regard, because we'll be at the Ladies Munster Final in Mallow on Sunday, Kerry versus Cork as well. And we might take your photograph at that, so just to let you know. Now, here's a great story about Dynasty. We were talking about Joan Collins earlier and the fact that she's 90 years old today. Tralee Lady rang up and says, Deirdre, only for Dynasty, I wouldn't be alive today. I was in hospital back in 1988. I was complaining all day of not feeling well. I decided to go to the day ward that night to watch Dynasty. On the way there, I fainted. This alerted the medical staff immediately to the severity of my condition, and I ended up having surgery that very night. So I'll always be grateful to Dynasty. So now, there you go. There's a great story. If she wasn't such a Dynasty fan, she mightn't be with us nowadays. So there's one lady who's forever grateful to Joan Collins and Linda Evans and John Forsyth and all of those people who starred in the popular soap opera back in the day. Wasn't as good as Dallas, though. Dallas was the other big soap that I seem to recall from back in the 1980s. And I remember being sent to bed before Dallas started, because it was considered too raunchy for me. So there you go. Innocent times indeed when you think about what kids are watching nowadays. Okay, I told you I had another book to tell you about now, and this sounds like a right good read. It is called Adventures in Wonderland, and it's all about the music business, but told from the perspective of somebody who was working away behind the scenes as a music agent. His name is Paul Charles. He is from County Derry, and he's on the line now to tell us all about it. Paul, you're very welcome.
How are you doing?
I'm great, and it's lovely to talk to you.
Likewise.
How did you find yourself an agent in the music business? Because it sounds terribly glamorous.
Well, actually, how it started was a long, long while ago. As a schoolboy, I think I was 14, maybe going on 15, and a bunch of my mates at school had decided they were going to form a group, a wee group. And in those days, the basic requirements of being in a group was you either had to be a good singer, which I'm not, or play an instrument, which I can't, or your father had to have a motor car and ferry the band around to all the gigs, which we didn't have a car at the time. So I needed to find a way to hang out, continue to hang out with my friends. So I lived, luckily enough, two doors away from a gentleman by the name of Dixie Kerr, who played saxophone in a show band called The Breakaways. So I went and knocked on Dixie's door and said, Dixie, any chance you could give The Blues by Five, which is the name of the group, a few support gigs, relief spots at some of the dance clubs. He said, of course we will. He actually took out his diary, mentioned three dates to me, gave me the details for it. I went, spoke to the group, and said, look, here's three bookings I got for you, because they called bookings in those days, not gigs, that I've gotten for you. And they said, okay, great, you're the manager. So that's how I became a manager. And the manager really in those days was just somebody who got the gigs, and it kind of, luckily enough for me, it kind of went on from there.
It went on from there. And I presume, Paul, that you must have travelled all over the place, all over the world, during the course of your long career as a music agent.
Yeah, pretty much, because I'm a kind of hands-on kind of agent. I like to go to gigs. I like to go to gigs a lot. And so, you know, if you're lucky enough working with Van Morrison or Jackson Browne or Tom Waits or Crosby, Stills and Nash or the Waterboys or, you know, many, many people like that, then to get a chance to see them on a nightly basis, it's just too big a treat to miss. And sometimes you've got to do a bit of troubleshooting or whatever. So, yes, I would have certainly been all over Europe, obviously been to America, Japan, Australia, quite a bit from time to time. And, you know, enjoyed my travels. I mean, particularly the performance part of it, being on, seeing these great people on stage.
And of course, yeah, and for somebody like you who loves music, that's absolutely incredible. But what about the whole rock and roll lifestyle? Because it's painted to us on the outside as sleeping in tour buses and long, long journeys and going from one hotel room to another and lots of drugs and groupies and everything. And, you know, how do you stay normal in the middle of that kind of a life? Or is that exaggerated?
Well, parts of it are exaggerated. In seriousness, basically the life on the road isn't a bowl of cherries. Pretty much it is travelling all day, near enough every day, different hotel rooms. But it doesn't seem to matter. It matters when you're going through it. But what happens is, throughout the day, as your day progresses, there's something that kind of hooks onto you and pulls you through the day, gets you through the airports and the different hotels and the travel and the, you know, meeting people and kind of taxis and whatever. And as the day continues in it, you know, by the time you get to your sound check, this feeling, this magnet drawing you in is stronger and stronger and stronger, until when it's 8 o'clock, and you walk on the stage, you realize exactly what your day was all about. Your day was all about the buzz that you feel when you walk on stage and there's an audience there waiting for you. That's why all of these people do this. It allows them to be in a special arena with an audience, creating this wonderful music, and it's just, you know, it's a major, major payoff.
So it's the buzz of the live show.
Yes, totally.
You must, working in the music industry, and I mean, I'm looking down at the names, Paul, of some of the people you've worked with, both individual singers, musicians, and well-known bands like the likes of The Waterboys, Dexys, Midnight Runners. I could go on and on. I mean, you must be dealing with some pretty big egos over those years as well. Did that get difficult from time to time?
Not really, and I'll tell you why. I've kind of made it a golden rule of mine that I would never, ever work with an artist that I didn't really love. And the logic being that if you really love an artist, if you really, really enjoy their music, think their music is great, then my logic always was, you'll do a much better job for them. If you take on somebody you think, yeah, I'm not really my cup of tea, but I might make some money out of this, that's when you're on the road to disaster, you know. And then the people that I like, by and large, have been, you know, songwriter-based, people that love to write songs, people that write great songs, people that, you know, create this wonderful music. And by and large, that's a group of people that don't really get involved in all of the... I think the kind of the rock and roll lifestyle that's popular in the media is not really the real part of the music business, the part of the music business that I'm involved in terms of people go out and it's a wholesome business and people just like to, you know, like anybody else, they're family men, they're family women, and, you know, this is what they're doing, this is what they've been blessed, we've been able to do, and they cherish that and kind of protect it.
And do you get to kind of be up close and personal with a lot of these big names in the rock and pop world, or is it a strictly business relationship? You're the agent and you provide a service and you kind of step back and leave that little bit of distance between you and them.
Well, I think you have to err on the side of caution in doing that, because at the end of the day, you have to realize that what you are is you are the agent. You know, you become friends with some of them become friends with you, but you have to keep remembering you're not there to be their friend. You're there to take care of their business. You're there to look after them. You're there to protect them on the deal. You're there to protect them, you know, just the whole thing long term. I mean, what I've tried to do with the book really is what I like to, when I read a book about an ear that I don't know, I like to be brought behind the scenes, maybe even to places that I'm not meant to go or know about, and I like to get drawn into that and be told, you know, make it like you're there, make it like you're on the tour bus, or you're in the dressing room, or you're in the recording studio, and that's one of the things, you know, we've done in the book, is to kind of take some of the stories from that angle so that people get a sense of the real life. I mean the real life, not the rock and roll lifestyle, that it is like to be on the road and to be writing songs and creating songs and making music and performing.
Do you have a favourite, Paul, of all the bands and the artists you work with over the years? I know that's like asking you to pick your favourite child, but there must be some singer or artist or songwriter that you worked with that we would have heard of that stands out to you.
you know, there are lots, but here's the thing. When I went to see Rory Gallagher and Taste years ago in Kelly's in Portrush, I was totally over. That was the best night of my life. When I went to see the Carpenters in the Palladium, London, that was the best night of my life then. You know, Karen Carpenter sang as sweet as an angel, one of the best. She could make you cry, she sang, so, and then she could play the drums as well. When I saw Van Morrison do his comeback show in the theatre in London, that was the best night of my life. You know, when I saw Christy Moore playing in Glasgow Barland, that was the best night of my life. So the point I'm trying to make is, when you're there in that moment, that is the best experience you've ever had. And so you wouldn't really compare one with the other. I mean, I remember lots of times going to these great gigs, and lots of them, and then you would kind of go in to the office the next day, and you would try and find a word or words to describe to everybody else how great it was and how you felt, and you could never get them. And that was the reason why, because it was so special. It was just a magic moment that you shared that you kind of, you couldn't convey beyond that. It was like one of those things, you know, you really had to be there on that spot as that music was being created and was kind of, was around you.
It's funny, isn't it, how things come full circle, because a lot of the big bands didn't have to tour for a long time because their music was just being sold in CDs or whatever format. But now a lot of them, because of Spotify, and they're not probably getting the big money they used to get, a lot of bands are touring more than they ever did before. I mean, it's a great time to be alive if you love gigs, isn't it? So, like, the music industry is thriving from the point of view of the live music, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you 100%. I think that because of all the things that you've described that have happened, really, live stage performances has taken over the number one spot in the music business. It has become the most important thing. Record companies, we all know, shot themselves in the foot with all the internet stuff going on. But I think it was also, you know, it seems to me that since COVID, you know, the intensity of people's performances, the intensity of the audience reacting to it, it has become a much bigger, a much more special, you know, arena for music to be enjoyed and experienced, you know. And me personally speaking, from the first gig I went to, you know, in Resharkin in Northern Ireland way, way back in the day, and there was a show band all called the Driftwoods, you know, what you hear on stage, what I heard on stage, what I've continued to hear on stage, has always, to my ears, been better and more enjoyable than what I hear on record. I enjoy records, I love records, you know, but it's not the same experience to me. It's that experience of hearing somebody do what they do and having the strength and the confidence to get up and do it in a public arena in front of people, to be as and that being part of the creative process, is just such a special thing.
Yeah, and the fact that it's different every night, you could go and see them on a Monday, and it'll be different from the show on the Thursday. Paul, you're still very much involved in the music industry, I believe, and still involved in Glastonbury, which I'm really, really jealous of.
Yeah, very lucky, very lucky. I've been working with Lab, a program, the Acoustic Stage, now in Glastonbury for the last 32 years. And you know, I've obviously booked Exo on the main stage with the other stages before that, but that's the one we kind of program now every year and have great fun doing. And also, it gets you to hear all the great new singer-songwriters or new groups that are kind of coming through.
And it sounds like you're as excited about music as you ever were.
I am, actually. No, I mean, that's a good, very good point, but I am. I still that buzz is still there. That's still such a, you know, that's why, you know, I really have been so lucky to be allowed to be doing what I have done, you know, all these years. It kind of, it's like, really, I couldn't have lived, for me, I couldn't have lived in a better era, and I could not have been involved in a better business for me.
Oh, well, it certainly sounds like it, and it sounds like it's a great read. It's called Adventures in Wonderland. It's out now, Paul, by Paul Charles. Paul, listen, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. I could talk to you for a lot longer if I could about your stories and the music industry, but I guess we'll all just have to buy the book. Listen, the very best of luck with it. Lovely to have you on the show.
Thank you very much, David. Thank you.
All the best. That is Paul Charles there. Adventures in Wonderland is the name of the book. A fascinating perspective to live through the rock and roll lifestyle, if you like, and the pop lifestyle from the perspective of a music agent. And Paul was one of Ireland's and probably one of the world's top agents when you look at the list of people he worked with down through the years and the people he would have met and the travels he had. I'd say that book is full of some great, great stories. Okay, it's published by Hot Press Books, by the way, in case you're looking for it. I believe it is available in bookstores here in Kerry. Now, a little later than usual, we're going to take a break, but we're going to be talking about the massive success of a conference that was on in Kerry quite recently and some of the key messages that have emerged from that conference. That's up next.
Talk About on Radio Kerry, brought to you in association